within the next 24 hours. Honshu, the mainland of Japan, and specifically near Tokyo, this tropical storm, Mindule, has the potential to cause quite a few concerns.
I have been there following Hillary Clinton around. I honestly don't quite know how she does it.
We don't have any concrete evidence of some sort of secret illness, as has been claimed by these conspiracy theorists.
There's nothing that I've seen, and I've been pretty close to the candidate.
Politicians do not have a new form of entitlement. They have to earn our votes, and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have not earned our vote.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday. It's August 22nd, 2016, 5:09. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, another business week. This, let me double check the calendar. Not the last, I guess it is the last full week of August. We have a couple of days next week, but we're slowly running out of August. The Olympics are over. The State Fair is over. And Labor Day is right around the corner. It'll be snowing soon, probably. No, we have plenty of warm weather left, but we have lots of stuff to talk about today. You heard there in the opening segment, Tokyo, Japan, the mainland of Japan, bracing for this monster typhoon that is bearing down on that country. Flights have been canceled and delayed and moved around. The storm is bigger than the island itself. So it is a very serious situation, and to make matters worse, within the last half hour or so, the area has been shaken by a rather moderate earthquake, a 5.6 magnitude earthquake just offshore of Japan as the trading day, as their Monday, moves into afternoon and evening. Let's begin first at the WGN Market Desk. Here's your overnight intel. Dow futures are lower by about 7. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed this morning in Asia. The Nikkei is up about 52 points. Most of the other indices are lower today. Europe is generally higher today. The DAX in Germany is up almost 0.5%. The CAC in France is up as well. The markets there seem to be doing well this morning. But here in this country, the investors on Wall Street are taking a wait-and-see attitude on this Fed interest rate hike decision. We've got a couple of indications of where that might be going over the weekend. One of the Fed leaders was out and about talking about this. He's actually out west. He says that the Fed is close to hitting job and inflation targets. This is the Federal Reserve President, Vice Chairman Stanley Fisher. He gave a rather upbeat assessment of the economy's current strength, saying the job market is close to full strength, still improving. He says, in his words, we are close to our targets. And that sort of mirrors what Janet Yellen will talk about later this week. Her speech is titled, Ready for Another Interest Rate. We See Jackson Hole as Ready, is what she says, and we see the rest of the year as go. Some words from what we expect to be a speech from her on Friday. That could be what's troubling investors today on Wall Street. On Friday, the stock markets closed out a week in the red. Stocks took a step back on Friday, dragged down by utility shares. Investors worried again about those interest rate hikes. The NASDAQ fell behind, cushioned by Applied Materials. So that stock surged on strong current quarter profit forecast. But among other losers, Estee Lauder, the cosmetic maker's quarterly sales rose to strong demand, but it was less than analysts had expected. Illinois-based Deere stock bucking the trend, surging after it raised its full-year profit outlook. In Europe, stocks posted their worst weekly loss since the middle of June. Well, if you have a big meeting today and you've spent the weekend watching the Olympics, the closing ceremonies perhaps, you haven't had time to brush up on just about everybody who's going to be at that meeting. There's an app called App Charlie, Charlie App, that is based here in Chicago. And the world's most successful people are really raving about this, because apparently you can program in who you're meeting with. It'll find your contacts and then provide you with a dossier, apparently a very accurate dossier, of who is going to be at your meeting.
Meet Joe. Joe is about to go into a huge meeting. You know, the type that's so important that you get butterflies in your stomach. And you know what? Joe is going to rock it. He rocks every meeting, every interview.
Charlie's a free website right now, iOS app that wants to help eliminate those awkward moments between surfing information while you're holding your phone down so nobody can see you at those meetings and getting your job done. Productivity is a big deal on this. Our Allstate CEO spotlight this morning is on Aaron Friesen. He's the co-founder and CEO of Charlie App, and Jack Sutherland is with him, head of partnership at Charlie App. He'd previously launched New Grad. Both are with us this morning for the Allstate CEO spotlight. Aaron, let me begin with you, and this is a question I ask a lot of the CEOs who come through here. And that is, what gets you up in the morning? What motivates you to go to work and motivate everybody you work with?
That's a great question. I love building things. Our team is amazing. We spend a significant portion of our day together. I think of our team as almost like I have a wife, but also this is like a marriage with our startup team. So it's incredible. We're all just passionate, working every single day to make this happen and make this company happen. And it's really fun seeing people sign up and making an impact. So we love that.
And Jack, does he come in and is it? Can you vouch for this?
Oh, does he come in totally with that vouch attitude? For this. Yeah, I always mess with him and tell him that I'm like texting his wife, saying, complaining about him, like she would complain about him. Because we're literally like, I mean, we're together so much. We're all together so much, and this is like part of what we do. Like we're here and we're working really, really hard and really long hours, but we're doing it together because if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't be able to do it. So,
is it something that you live and breathe all the time, or is it something that you have to step away from at some point for your own sanity? And when you do, what do you do?
Yeah, so it is definitely something I live and breathe all the time, but I make sure that I am doing other things so that I can be fresh. So I've been playing a ton of ping pong, actually, which is a key startup sport, absolutely. And just I like to travel. So I like to explore an adventure, go camping. So those things keep me sane so that I'm fresh and continue to work on Charlie. But if I were to be honest, my mind is thinking about it all the time.
Now, when you say ping pong, are we talking old school ping pong with a ping pong table or something on a game that's on a device?
No, it's an app for ping pong. No, I'm just kidding. It's real ping pong. I do some real things.
Now, do you have a ping pong table in the office? Do you guys do that?
We have a ping pong table in the office, yeah. And then there's like a ton of ping pong bars and places opening up in Chicago, which is really cool. Hmm. So organize like a startup ping pong league and do that as well.
Do you let him beat you, Jack? Or do you...
I don't let him beat me, but he beats me every single time. I always mess with him saying I'm like call HR, like the imaginary HR, because he just beats me 11-0 every time. So.
Let's talk a little bit about Charlie. Where did the idea come from and how's it going?
Yeah, absolutely. So Charlie's an app that before you walk into a big meeting, say you're trying to close a deal, you're meeting with a bunch of executives, Charlie researches the people and companies that you're about to meet with and provides you a little one-pager so you can walk in and be prepared. We just saw that everyone was doing this today. Like people would frantically, before they walk into a big meeting, they'd be like staring at their phones, trying to Google the people, trying to learn more about the company. And like I was doing that myself. I found myself going into big deals with clients and there'd be 10 people in a room and I needed to make sure that I was professional, make sure that I was smart and prepared. And so really we were scratching our own itch. We were solving our own problem. And today we have actually 100,000 users, a lot of executives, salespeople, and people using it for even things like job interviews. And they just go to charlieapp.com and they download our app, and it'll automatically work before every meeting in their calendar.
We want to ask you to hold on here, Aaron and Jack. We'll continue our conversation here on the opening bell. This is the Allstate CEO Spotlight.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks were mixed as the financial world begins the trading week with an eye towards Friday's speech from Fed Chair Janet Yellen. She'll speak in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and could provide clues as to whether the Federal Reserve remains on track to raise interest rates, perhaps as early as this year. Road trippers will learn how much it'll cost to fill up for a late summer getaway today as the Energy Department set to release the latest gas prices. They've held at $2.15 on average for a gallon of regular for each of the past 2 weeks. The devastating flooding in Louisiana could hurt the nation's rice harvest. It was expected to be 26% larger this year than it was in 2015. But analysts say even if part of this year's crop is lost, the prices of products that use rice are unlikely to go up. A trade organization, USA Rice, says Louisiana farmers harvested about 80% of their crop before the floods. Rice futures have gone up 8% in the last week. Brian Clark, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 522, and welcome back to the program this morning. Our Allstate CEO Spotlight focusing on Charlie at the app, Twitter at App Charlie, and the CEO of the corporation, founder, in the studio with us talking about it this morning, Aaron Frazin, along with Jack Sutherland, the head of partnerships at Charlie App. And Jack, maybe this question is better suited for you, but perhaps you can tell us exactly how this works, how you get your information, where do you call this information from?
Yeah, I would say it's a mix of both. Mostly it's, I mean, these people are very busy. I'm sure you're very busy. We're all very busy. We have, you know, 10 meetings a day. It's very hard to stay on top of all of that, especially on your calendar. And so where Charlie really plays a good part is Charlie will allow you to still, you know, be successful in these meetings, but also give you the time that you otherwise wouldn't have to sort of go out and try and find research about, you know, whoever you're about to meet with. So it's definitely a combination. I think what's really important is the people who use Charlie are really passionate about caring about the person they're about to meet with. That's a key indicator of like a really good Charlie user. So they care about human interaction and they care about building a trusting relationship before they go into that meeting. And that's sort of what makes Charlie users really successful.
Would it pass the Opening Bell WGN radio talk show test? For instance, if I knew I had you guys coming in for a meeting and I didn't have time to research it, would it be enough? Would it be solid enough for me to go on the air and talk to these guys? Like I just done a dossier on them?
Absolutely. So it looks at your calendar, and 10 minutes before the meeting, it sends you a push notification. It says, hey, you're about to meet with Aaron and Jack in 10 minutes. Here's what you should know. And when you click that, it gives you a little one-pager. Here's our background. Here's our interests. Here's any commonalities we may have. We both follow the Bears on Twitter, things like that. Mm-hmm. Or even things like, hey, the person you're meeting with was in the news last week. Here was their quote from the article. Or their company was just acquired. So we've built it in a way that it takes all the things you might find yourself doing across Google, across news, across all the different social networks. And it does it all for you, so you can just sit back, relax, and know that you're going to be prepared when you walk in.
And it's enough that you feel confident knowing it's not going to find the wrong Jack or the wrong Steve. Or
we spent a lot of time making that happen. Our engineering team is incredible, and they have perfected that. So I mean, it gets it wrong occasionally, but we want to have over 95% accuracy. So you know that it's going to be preparing you before you walk in.
Yeah. We have a nice little segment of users that are all podcasters, people who are doing meetings every single day where it's an interview and you have to have ammo for your conversation. Mm-hmm. You have to know about the person. Otherwise, it's not a good conversation. I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it works perfectly in that use case. Maybe we should get you guys on it.
Well, I was actually trying to do you guys before you came in this morning. I thought it dawned on me at the last moment because I did all the research sort of the old-fashioned way, and I thought, you know, I should have used Charlie to try this. And as I was, I didn't have enough time to finish it before you guys got here. But, you know, one of the things that I was questioning about it is what sources do you draw from? I mean, where do you go to find this information to make sure that it's accurate?
Yeah, we make sure to pull up all the major social networks so that they're right in front of you. So we'll even open up the person's LinkedIn page. You can see their background. We'll go through Twitter and we look through the things that they're talking about and the people they follow. And from that, we can infer, hey, they're passionate about the Bears, or they like, I think one thing I saw on your briefing was you follow a ton of accounts related to space exploration.
Right,
so you're
right.
Super passionate about
that,
space.
Yeah.
And Charlie will say, hey, here's something that they're passionate about. Or it even goes so far as going through millions of different news sources so that we know if, let's say, you're in the news or if your company was in the news, which is really important because a lot of business people use this. People going into big client meetings. And it, for them, it's incredibly important to know if anything changed in the company. So were they acquired? Did they launch a product? Are they growing? Are they shrinking? What's going on? And how can I get a quick snapshot of the company so I can go in and really tailor the conversation?
You mentioned podcasters, Jack. And for broadcasters, for journalists, you know, you're one of five interviews that I'm going to be doing today. So time is money for people like us in this business, where it takes forever sometimes to do these research dossiers on people. How much time do you think this saves people, you know, using Charlie?
Yeah, we've done like so many studies to try and understand our users and understand how much time we're saving.
That a lot of executives and salespeople use. And people use Salesforce when they're about to reach out to someone, or let's say that they have current clients and they need to get intelligence on them. And so what we do for them is right before they click call or right before they're about to send an email, Charlie instantly pulls up a one pager on that person and company. And that is the premium version of Charlie. And it's fully custom. Yeah, I think one time we did a study and we found that it saves an average of 57 Google searches per meeting. So it'll do everything from what's the person's social networks to like all the little things that people might find themselves doing. And it just automates that all. So you don't need to do anything. You just need to have our app.
Aaron Frazin is one of the CEOs and founders of Charlie App, here today with Jack Sutherland, who is the head of partnership at the app. Again, App Charlie. You can find it at charlieapp.com. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell this morning and post our full podcast online later this morning with the CEO and with also with Jack at Charlie App. App Charlie at App Charlie.
From ABC News Tech Trends, when Detroit meets Silicon Valley, Ford says it's throwing its hat into the ring to create a self-driving car, and it expects to do so in a pretty aggressive timeline. The company says it's expanding its partnership with Velodyne, a Silicon Valley-based company that will help it produce a fully autonomous car by 2021.
This race to autonomous cars really is the future of mobility and what every company wants to be in.
Edmunds.com senior analyst Jessica Caldwell says Ford's first generation of self-driving cars will be used for ride sharing, as the company says the nature of ownership is changing and more people rely on shared forms of transportation. Caldwell says the five-year goal is an aggressive timeline, but Ford does have an edge.
They have the car portion down. Now they just have to figure out all the technology to make cars fully autonomous, which is really challenging.
Ford will have competition, though, as GM has already announced a partnership with Lyft to launch an autonomous car, and Volvo has announced plans to roll out a self-driving car by 2020. With Tech Trends, I'm Mark Remillard, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:38. Hydrogel-based materials are the basis of new experiments in the science community, having been utilized for all kinds of things like buildings, condoms, soft tissues, contact lenses, other things. It almost looks like Jell-O. Well, now hydrogels are being used to form a gel-like material that can also be used to treat dressings, that can be a dressing for burns, second-degree burns. Dr. Mark Grinstaff is one of the researchers who's leading the charge on this. He is with Boston University. He's with the chemistry department there, by the way, formerly of the University of Illinois. But before we get into our interview with him, let's give you a sense of what we're talking about.
We're trying to actually make a smart Band-Aid that can sense what the state of the wound is. They can both sense different things from the wound, whether that would be pH, oxygen, temperature, or other kinds of things from the wound, and then be able to respond to it.
That's from a report. This is going to be particularly helpful for burn units, especially for children who are in those burn units, because taking off dressings and Band-Aids, that is the most painful, almost unbearably painful part of suffering from a burn. Let's join Mark Grinstaff. He's with us via Skype this morning from Boston University. Dr. Grinstaff, if you could maybe describe this a little bit for our listeners, since we're radio, but this is sort of kind of reminds me of like a rubber ball or some sort of rubber plastic material.
It is. So one way to think about it is like two solutions that when they mix together form a gel. So like an epoxy cement that you might find at the hardware store. But the gel that gets formed is much more like your Jell-O at home. And so it has lots of water, it's soft, it's flexible, and can keep things moist. And so it's this idea that you can apply the material as kind of a liquid, a semi-solid, and then it gels when it's actually on the burn wound itself.
I was describing to you, you know, my tour of a burn unit once. I just remember the horribleness of it. This will take some of that away?
Yes, because what we know is that after the burn itself, the time of most pain is in the dressing changes. And we know that, in fact, if you change that dressing a few times a day or even once a day, that pain associated with that procedure is quite significant. And in fact, in the pediatric world, this is even more evident. So unfortunately, for children who get burned, oftentimes they'll use anesthesia to put the child to sleep so they can change that dressing and then wake them back up. And so again, it makes the procedure extremely complicated. Lots of people are involved. There's additional risk for the patients. And so I think if there's a way that we could actually kind of like spray on this dressing, it forms this nice seal on the tissue. And then after it's done its job, if you could easily remove it, we think that would be great.
As I look at this and think about this, and I'm just amazed. First, could you walk us through where this idea came from? Where did the idea originate?
So the idea originated from basically talking with clinicians. And so in the lab, we had been designing some sealants, some glues. And everything about designing a sealant is about how you make the sealant. How do you form the gel that will hold things together? And we were talking with some clinicians, in fact, a specialist for pediatric burns. And he was telling us that when they do, you know, how they treat burns, and then this problem of when they remove the bandage, there's all this pain. And so we started asking lots of questions about, you know, how do you actually do the procedure, and what precautions do you take, and what materials are you using? And from all of that discussions with the clinicians, we realized there might be an opportunity to do something very unique and new, and that is design something where you could actually remove that bandage in a very facile manner.
This is a part of a bigger effort with what has been called smart bandages. We're developing, if you could maybe talk us through a little bit of how this development is ongoing. Aside from this development, we're making great progress in terms of like bandages that know when there's an infection, et cetera, right?
Yeah. So I think this idea of kind of smart bandages is a really cool idea, because not only does the bandage kind of perform its primary function, you know, let's say keeping the wound protected and facilitating healing, but if it can give additional information or provide new ways of improving treatment, that's great. So you're right. Those types of systems where you could see if a bacteria infection is starting to form, or a sensor that might detect it's time to change the bandage. In other words, all the fluid has come up and it's time to change. Those types of readouts and being able to do that on a personal way for that particular patient, I think, is also an exciting avenue that people are looking at.
I even hear that somehow fish skin is part of these experiments.
Not ours, but out there, there's a whole lot of different projects where people are trying to look at different materials and the properties of those materials. And sometimes people take ideas that would come from nature.
So where are we headed with this? It seems almost science fiction to think about where we might be going, but you have a better sense than most.
Yeah, I mean, I think on our side, there's a couple of key things that we need to do. So we've performed some initial studies, and they all look quite positive. And the next two things we need to do are basically what's called good manufacturing practice. So in other words, we need to make this material on a scale and in a manner that's consistent with the FDA guidelines. And then we need to do some additional safety studies. And I think if we can complete those two tasks, we would be in a position to actually do a clinical trial with one of our clinicians. And so, you know, that part requires both work from the academic side, but also partnering with industry to make sure that we can do that.
Because until now, this has only been tested on rats?
That is correct. So only on small animals. And so the proper protocols would be to ensure that one can manufacture it and ensure that it's safe before you start using it on individuals.
How soon might that be before, you know, actual people might benefit from this?
So our goal is roughly 12 to 18 months from now. We hope to be using it in either a patient. In about 12 to 18 months, our goal is to have this be used on individuals.
Is there any negatives that you've seen from any of this yet?
So far, so good. You know, as with anything, you want to make sure you keep doing the right experiments and testing things and asking all the questions that you possibly can. But right now, it looks incredibly encouraging, and that's driving us to work harder so that we can move this closer to the clinic.
And have you thought beyond the human trial of this particular invention, is, for lack of a better word, to how you might advance even this idea?
I think it's in one way it's quite logical. In other words, we'll be working with a company, and so that'll be great. And then it's about what other indications this material might be useful for. And so, you know, if we can show that it has good performance in the treatment of secondary degree burns, there might be other opportunities that come out during the next year or two that tell us, okay, this would be good for this type of wound. But right now, it's important for us to stay focused so that we can actually accomplish this task and, you know, and try to make a change in the clinic.
Aside from the actual going through the treatment of burns, the scarring is quite significant. Does this help in that area?
One would think so. I don't have data to support that. But if you look at the materials that people use today for wound dressings that reduce the scarring effect, our material has a lot of those same characteristics. So again, that's something we'll have to find out with additional work. But from a design perspective, we've tried to include all of those types of data and information into the materials that we're making.
Is your motivation through all of this, that agony that people go through, do you think about that as you work through this every day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all about the individual. You know, how do we improve upon current clinical treatments? And that's a great motivating factor for myself as well as my students here. Because, you know, it's one thing to do exciting science and engineering. It's another if we can actually move that closer to the clinic and make a difference in the quality of lives of individuals.
From Boston University in Boston, Dr. Mark Rinstaff with us on Skype this morning, talking about this new hydrogel, a bandage dressing for burns, second degree burns. You can read more about this. You could head over to @BU Chemistry. That's their Twitter account. Dr. Grinstev, by the way, former University of Illinois professor as well. We might mention that this is just the beginning in what is called the smart bandage era. The engineers at the University of California, Berkeley, are developing bandages that also tell when there might be an infection forming in the sore or the issue that's on the body. There are also bandages that can tell when bed sores are starting to form and when cancer cells are dying. All of this moving forward with these smart bandages.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:52. Welcome back to the program. On the WGN Market Desk, the Dow futures pointing toward losses when the opening bell rings later this morning. Off 37 points now. The NASDAQ and S&P lower as well. Oil is trading lower by about $1.36, $47.16. There is news, breaking news this morning in the world of business. Pfizer has confirmed a deal to buy Medivation in a transaction valued at $14 billion. Medivation stock is up 19% now. Pfizer is also jumping as well. We will have more on this as we move through the day, but apparently this is going to be a big deal. in the drug world. Again, Pfizer agreeing to buy Medivation, $14 billion. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we begin this trading week in livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, cattle traders will be looking at the numbers in that number of cattle placed on feed for the month of July. The number was up 2% compared to a year earlier, but analysts are saying it wasn't that much higher to have a negative impact. The report showed July placements at 1,572,000 head. That's up from 1,547,000 head last year. Number of cattle on feed as of August 1st, 10,165,000 compared to 10,002,000 a year ago. And the government said the number of cattle sold to packers slipped 1%. In July. Hog futures ended the week higher and feeder cattle ended the week higher. And of course, weather continues to be a factor in the grain market because good growing conditions continue as we now approach harvest. And soybeans ended the week down 4¾ cents, but corn 2¼ higher and wheat a half cent higher on the December contract. And let me send out a good morning to the folks in Streeter, Illinois this morning, because Saturday night I'll be in Streeter for a first-time event, the Agriculture Development Symposium. And that's to bring farmers and city people together and talk about the challenges and the successes of agriculture in the Streeter area. So we'll be down there on Saturday night and look forward to seeing you at the Streeter City Farmers event. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. We will continue to follow your money throughout the morning here on 720 WGN. The Steve Cochran Show, of course, up next. Just one final note. Sometimes you see something that just completely blows your mind, and I thought I'd share one of those things with you today. You've heard that tic-tac-toe can play out any hundreds of thousands of different ways. As a matter of fact, 255,168 ways a computer has determined. Get this. Chess can play out more ways than there are atoms in the universe. Boom! Did your head just explode? Mine did. Some science info to get you going this morning.